was terminally pretty. She held him up and he held her for ransom in the heart of the cold, cold city. He had a nasty reputation as a cruel dude and said he was ruthless.
And at 10:02, Club Talk continues. Sandy Clough, our second of 3 hours on this Wednesday morning, 17th day of July, 2013, on your home for the best live and local sports talk. Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. In studio for the next hour, Dr. Rick Perea. Back again, let's see, January, February, March, April, May, June, July. The appearance number 7 for you?
Lucky 7.
Well, that's lucky number 7.
Absolutely.
In the dreary dog days of July, where we are kind of betwixt and between, devoid of tangible sports activity, least for another few hours until the British Open gets underway. And, of course, the Major League Baseball season resumes on Friday. But we are in kind of a lull here. I think a perfect time to bring you on. We inaugurated this series of programs with you back in January, coming off the Bronco playoff loss to the Baltimore Ravens. And a lot has happened over the last 6 months in
yes.
our fair city.
Yes.
Some of it good. Much of it bad, but your perspective again, and we spent the first hour detailing and providing analysis of the tangible, of the quantifiable. Mm-hmm. We bring you in during this hour to take a look maybe at some of these same issues from a different qualitative sort of perspective. So for people who haven't heard you before, and Dr. Perea is a sports psychologist, Metro State, University of Colorado, give us basically your framework, where you come from, on some of the same issues that we typically talk about on Sports Talk Radio day in and day out, but from a perspective that is uniquely yours.
Okay, thank you. Great to be here again, Sandy. Great
Good
to see everyone. Basically, I want to differentiate quantitative from qualitative assessments in the sporting context. For example, when we talk about quantitative assessment, we talk about keeping score, the score of the game, how many touchdown passes a quarterback has, how many strikes a pitcher throws, the free throw percentage of a basketball player, for example. But qualitative assessments are those elements of human behavior that we can't really measure and put into numbers. But they're really important because when we talk about sport performance, regardless of what sport it is, we're talking about human behavior.
Yeah.
And so when people think about sport psychology, they don't necessarily always marry those two concepts or constructs. And so what we do is we help athletes understand there is a real qualitative piece, human behavior, okay, element to human performance. And if we just look at the quantitative assessments, the numbers, that, if you will, that gives us a snapshot, but it doesn't give us the whole picture. And so often what we do in sports psychology is define and delineate the qualitative aspects of human performance, such as that is very variable. For example, on any given day, you know, Peyton Manning, if you remember last year against the Atlanta Falcons, threw three picks in the first half.
First quarter.
Qualitatively speaking, okay, there was something going on there. Now, whether it was his inability to filter out irrelevant cues versus focusing on relevant cues, whatever it may have been, there was some kind of qualitative aspect to those three picks being a quantitative assessment. So what we try to do is to really differentiate quantitative from qualitative, and we hold up not the red flag but the white flag, and we say, hey, look at us. Qualitative is really important to analyze too, because if you don't, you're going to miss a big picture of why humans perform on a high level or they self-handicap and don't perform at high levels.
It's interesting. Going back when we first spoke with you back in January, basically, the entire hour was devoted to the Bronco playoff loss. But of the four major professional sports teams in the market, since that time, the Broncos are the only ones not to have played a single game. So it seems to me that analysis of the Broncos, devoid of having any games to break down and talk about, discuss, delineate, whatever, much of the view of the Broncos right now is based on some of the things that you're talking about.
Yes, absolutely.
Going back and evaluating those things. Less tangible, because we don't have anything tangible to analyze,
right,
and I haven't since January 12th, and more intangible that way. And yet the distance between the Broncos and championship contending status seems to be in the minds of the public. The psychology of the public following the Broncos seems to be the Broncos are not only closer than anybody else, but right there as maybe the lead championship contender, where the odds, again, this is a tangible formulation, on the other teams are 40 to 1 with the Nuggets, 40 to 1 with the Avalanche, 66 to 1 we read this week at the All-Star break with the Colorado Rockies. The Broncos are 7, 8 to 1. That's a huge gap. Does your analysis conform with that gap being appropriate, that people feel that the Broncos, of all the major professional sports teams, are the closest to championship contention, and they're tangible and intangible reasons, legitimate reasons to believe that?
Yes. From a quantitative perspective, I concur. I agree completely that they are probably the closest team to...
By far.
Yeah. But again, let's not forget about qualitative. I mean, if you let me give you a couple of intangibles that could happen. If Von Miller gets hurt, okay, that changes that defense dramatically, and that's a qualitative aspect in terms of someone getting hurt. If Peyton Manning gets hurt, that changes that offense from a large perspective in the qualitative aspect. You know, we look at Sylvester Williams, their number one draft choice. When I've watched tape of him, he plays what we call the one technique, and that's really that weak side gap, a gap between the guard and the tackle,
right,
that has to demand the double team.
Yes.
Okay, if he is effective at that position, that's really going to solidify the defense because they don't really have a true one technique player.
They did not last year.
They did not, but now they hope they do. But that's a big jump to take from Division I college football to playing the one technique in the NFL. So from a qualitative perspective, I just caution people. And I want to say this, Andy, because sometimes when I'm on the show, I hear people say, well, you're pretty critical of the Broncos. Well, critical, the connotative definition of critical takes on a whole nother meaning. Really, if you look at the denotative definition of critical, it means to analyze. So I get paid to analyze teams, okay? I really do. I work with several college and NFL teams, and they don't want me being rah-rah fan. I have to tell them what they don't want to hear. I have to give them the antithesis.
Okay, help us out. What do you see generally or even specifically in the Broncos that represents something that we may be missing or not wishing to hear?
Yeah.
You mentioned the injury possibility,
right.
Which is always out there, that key players could get hurt, and the Broncos were, you're right, last year, relatively fortunate in that regard.
Yeah.
Not completely immune from injury, of course, but relatively fortunate that their key players stayed healthy.
Yes. Well, one aspect I would look at is team cohesion. And we look at in sports psychology, how do you foster team cohesion? Well, it's done through a multitude of protocols and procedures. But number one is players have to accept their role. They have to accept their role, they have to adhere to their role, and they have to comply with their role. And if you don't have that on a team, it can break up what we call team chemistry. The layperson calls it chemistry. In sports psychology, we call it team cohesion. So if one of the things we may be missing is this is going to be a different team this year. There are many of the same parts are in place, but as I told you back in, I believe, March or April, whenever they signed Welker,
yes,
you know, I sounded like the boogeyman himself because I said, slow down a minute, because Wes, that team cohesion could be disrupted a little bit.
Respect to Decker and Thomas?
Yes. And well, I mean, there's one ball, okay? And we look at how many balls those guys caught last year, and now you bring in Welker, the balls are going to be, you know, there's only one ball to be spread around. So that could, I'm not saying it will happen, but that could disrupt team cohesion somewhat on the offensive end, okay? On defense, team cohesion is vitally important because if you look at offense, it's assignment football. You break the huddle, you know where you're going, you have an assignment. When you break the huddle in defense, you have a gap responsibility. Either you're a one-gap or two-gap player or a coverage, but you still are reacting to the offense. That requires a lot of communique within the defense and a lot of team cohesion. And if you don't have people that play together and understand their roles and adhere to their roles, that can disrupt team cohesion. Now, I'm not saying that's going to happen, but oftentimes we see teams, whether it's in football or basketball, where they're, quote unquote, look great on paper, but they come out and do not necessarily perform to their capabilities.
Fascinating. We'll continue this conversation. A lot of Bronco talk this hour with Dr. Rick Perea, and we'll get into some other areas as well, as time permits, of course, on your home for the best live and local sports talk, Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio, 104.3 The Fan. 17 on your home for the best live local sports talk, Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. Sandy Clef with you. Dr. Richard Perea in studio as our guest for the entire hour. Total Beverage text line 295-88-303-228-1043. We'll get back to the football conversation here in just a second. But from the 303 comes the following, Dr. Perea. My teen daughter is interested in sports psychology. What's the best path forward? Summer jobs, classes, etc.?
Well, the first thing I'd want to know how old she is. I mean, because the first element, the baseline element of sports psychology is psychology. You take an introductory psychology class.
Yeah.
And then another course that has a strong correlation with sports psychology is social psychology. And the reason that is because social psychology studies how people behave in the presence of others. So what that means is it's a real social element. And if you look at sport, there is so much social comparison in sport. Again, I think people think of sport as this little island all by itself, but it's human behavior. And when you look at people and the way they perform, and you see this all the time in youth sport. My daughter grew up playing youth sports and ended up playing at Arizona State, so I've been through the whole process. But you watch youth sport, and kids look at each other and compare their performance with each other. And then they take that information and psychologically process it, and sometimes really in a really negative way. If they're not such a good athlete, then they take that and kind of, you know, makes up their self-conceptualization of who they are, which we try to combat and try to help them with. But I would say the first thing to do is take introductory psychology classes, yeah, sports psychology, and then when you get to the high school and college level, really try to guide yourself in that direction. And we have a great program at Metro where we teach sports psychology specifically. I do. DU has a graduate program in the master's program. So there are really options out there. And if they want to get more information, they can contact me at Metro State.
All right. Very good. We're talking about the changes on the defense. And we were discussing this a little more during the break. You tend to think that the Bronco defense, which has improved dramatically in each of the last 2 years by 5 points or more per game in each of the last 2 years, going from giving up 29.5 points a game 2010 to a little bit more than 18 last year. Only Seattle's come close to that kind of improvement over the last 2 years. And you kind of look at it over the course of the offseason and think, okay, well, most of the pieces are coming back. But there's some big changes. They're talking about perhaps a complete changeover among the safeties,
yep,
or between the two safety spots. Middle linebacker, new guy. Sylvester Williams, top draft pick.
Right.
Figures to see a lot of time at defensive tackle. He's new.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's
a lot of new pieces to fit in.
Yep.
And the anticipation this year is that they will continue to improve. Maybe not by taking 5 points off their yield from last year, but maybe improve by a point, point and a half, 2 points.
Right. And I would say that they probably will play very cohesively this year. But the problem is when you have a new
first time in a while they've had the same defensive coordinator 2 years in a row, too.
Yeah. That's amazing.
That may help.
It is amazing.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you have a new Mike linebacker, when you have a new five technique, you know, Doomerville was your five, right, played out in the seven technique as well. But when you have a new Mike, a new five, a new seven, and then you're still kind of playing around with your one technique because, I mean, if Sylvester Williams pans out, and I'll be honest with you, there's very few athletes that can come out from college.
You said the transition's very tough. Wait, is it tougher physically or psychologically, the transition?
It's both.
Williams?
It's both because physically you have to be a dominant physical player to take that double team between the center and the guard on a play-to-play basis, okay? And also psychologically because, I mean, you're used to dominating in college, and then you come in here – and you're getting blocked by men. You're getting blocked by people as big as you, as strong as you, and maybe with more nasty than you. And then we call that nasty, and that's kind of the psychological edge where you just want to kick somebody's butt, play in and play out. But there's a lot of different pieces on the defensive side that aren't set. You talk about the safeties. You know, again, I go back with Champ. I mean, I'm not raining on Champ's parade, but you know what? Champ is getting up in age, and to play corner in this league, you've got to be able to run. And, well, I think he really has lost a step. He's going to need some help, so there's going to be some adjustment there. So I think in terms of talking about the qualitative aspects that I mentioned earlier, there's a lot of question marks on the defense. I will say this about Jack Del Rio. I think he's done a wonderful job at mixing those pieces and making them work.
Absolutely.
And great defensive coordinators understand how to put people in positions where they're going to succeed. And, you know, you look at – so let's say if Sylvester Williams gets a lot of reps at the one technique, you know, Vickerson's probably going to be at the three. Okay, he hasn't always played at the three. You know, so again, there's a lot of change in that defensive line in terms of gap responsibilities and playing different techniques. And it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. So again, on paper, I'm with you. It looks really good for the Broncos, but again, I'm a little more analytical. And let me just say this before we go any further. You know, I hear people say, oh, you're being negative or you're a negative Nancy when you really point out points that maybe will not go, you know, right with the Broncos. It's
yeah,
not,
so we're getting a few texts already to that effect.
It's not negative. It's analysis, okay? It's important that I mean, one of the things I'm such a big fan of Sandy is he's very analytical, and you really break down this content. And so that's what really we're trying to do is be analytical and say, here's the possibilities. Because, again, if you look at the loss to the Ravens, there were a lot of people that were so surprised by that. And I was one of the few that came on and says, I'm not surprised because, again, if you consider the qualitative piece, then you know on any given day a team in the NFL can beat another team, regardless of personnel and team cohesion.
Did the Broncos underrate the Ravens? Going back a little bit, was there a problem that they underrated the Ravens, overrated their own capabilities? Looking back now with 7 months of perspective.
Yeah. No, I don't think they underrated the Ravens. I really don't. I think as long as John Elway's at the helm, he keeps it, quote unquote, uncomfortable enough in that building where he lets people know, you know, you need to do your job. And that trickles down from the head coach all the way to the coordinators, to the position coaches, to the water boys. Okay. And so it's run well that way. I think what hurt him was game day decisions. Very specifically,
in-game game day decisions,
situational decisions where they had to make astute decisions on the fly, on the snap, and it didn't really happen for them. So I think that's more to look at. That's more the process I think they're looking at. And I would not be surprised if they're going through mock scenarios like that. So if something
they were not good in the situational football areas in which they had generally excelled during the regular season. They were
absolutely
not good on January 12th in those ways.
Right. Well, and you can't mock regular season context with, you know, postseason context. I mean, postseason, you either win or you're done or you're going home. And so the decisions you make in the situations are vital to your success. And I don't think they took the Ravens lightly, but I think their game day decisions and situational decisions hurt them. Again, we talk about Raheem Moore, but I go back even further. Let's be analytical. Okay, it's not negative. This is analytical. What was the call? What was the coverage call? That's very vital to that player being in position. Because when you...
There were definitely other mistakes made on that play beyond those made by Raheem Moore.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you're in a cover two shell and one person makes a mistake, you're shot. If you're in a cover three or cover four or any kind of one deep cover four, you can make... A person can make a mistake and there's still people to make up for it. So play calling's important, and then decision making. You look at on the offense, there were decisions that were made that, you know, having hindsight now, did not consider the contextual and the situational perspectives that Baltimore really kind of capitalized on with Denver. So not so much taking them lightly, but I think situationally they did not make decisions that helped them put themselves in a position to win the game.
Is that something that they can work on, put more emphasis on, and get better results? Or is that just a question of having gone through this, you have to go through it, you have to make your mistakes in a playoff atmosphere, and you can drill and drill and drill, but that experience on January 12th will be just as valuable in teaching them looking ahead as anything they drill on starting next week?
Yeah, but this is the key, Sandy, if they learn from it. Here's the key. You know, many people go through situations like that, and time tends to lessen the pain, and they don't necessarily learn from it. You've got to learn from these experiences. And so what I suspect they're doing that down there is they're doing mock game situations where they actually will have down and distance tendencies, and they have to come up with snap decisions. What will we do in this situation when we have to – are we going to down the ball, or are we going to throw the ball down the field? What are we going to do, and what's our schema project us to be? Are we going to attack the defense and make them react to us, or we are going to sit back and play a conservative game, say, well, the percentages are 97% that we're going to win the game if we do this, or are we going to dictate the game to the defense? And that's what they need to decide, what their personality is going forward.
303-228-1043, 295-88 in the Total Beverage text line. Dr. Richard Perea, our in-studio guest. at 1026. This is your home for the best live and local sports talk, Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. You know, from a psychological point of view, we ought to put the respondents here on the Total Beverage text line at 29588 on the proverbial couch. I'll read a couple of the texts and get your response because it's very interesting. Sandy Clough on your home for the best live and local sports talk, Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. Dr. Richard Perea, our in-studio guest sports psychologist, Metro State University of Colorado. Okay, there are a couple here. I think this in part applies to me, but I guess, Dr. Perea, mostly to you from the 303. If you are as smart as you pretend to be, you would have taken into consideration the quantitative track of Ray Lewis and not all but guaranteed a Bronco victory in the playoffs. Well, I guess that would apply to me more than you weren't on before the game, right, guaranteeing right. anything. And you would have pointed out the qualitative track of a hot shooting basketball team and not all but guaranteed the Nuggets victory in the playoffs, which I don't remember you doing. I don't remember that I particularly did that either. I thought the Nuggets would win that series. I was a little bit more convinced of the Broncos' chances of advancing past the divisional round in the NFL playoffs last January. That is true. But then we have this from the 920. That analysis was all negative. Dr. Perea didn't analyze any impact the improvement of Hillman would have or the addition of Ball on the team. He didn't analyze the type of unselfish players Thomas and Decker are, which would lessen the importance of catches over wins with the addition of Welker. So when we supposedly guaranteed success last January, we're being admonished for that, and when we're suggesting that success is not guaranteed now, we're being admonished for that.
Right.
Fascinating, isn't it?
It is. Well, I'd like to...
The psychology of the fan.
Yes. I would like to remind the listeners that, number one, my background is rooted in being a football player. I grew up as a football player, played college football, and again, I was a free agent with the Broncos in 1983. So I've played for some great coaches, and I've had coaches just pound it into my head, and then thus, I learned it myself. You know, games aren't over until all three zeros show zero. And so really, there's many variables that can go on. And just because a team is favored does not mean the team should win. I mean, quantitative or qualitative assessment, that's just information to analyze. But you have to go out and win the game. You have to execute on the field. You have to execute your game plan. And you have to do what is expected of you to really win that game. And so when I analyze, for example, the pieces we talked about earlier with Denver's defense having some variable parts, that's not negative. Now, Hillman is unproven. I mean, let's be honest. Hillman hasn't, on a down-to-down player, even if he's a third-down player, he has not proven himself yet in several seasons. And so it's hard
to
say.
He did have a very good game, one of the few who played up to expected standards in the playoff game.
Right.
Had a good game.
But again, that's a game. And so you have to have consistency over time. So again, I would caution people at confusing negativity with analysis in terms of just considering both sides of the aspect. For those of you that work in businesses, you understand that it's important to consider both sides of the coin. You don't just look at one side of winning. You look at, okay, what are the alternatives here? What could happen if we do not execute the way we're supposed to execute? We have to have an alternative plan,
right,
a plan B. So it's not just in sport. It's in business as well.
All right, since we last visited a little more than a month ago, the Aaron Hernandez case has broken wide open. What does this say about the Patriots? What does it say about the way Hernandez was developed, schooled, trained, coached? Does Urban Meyer share in any responsibility going back to Hernandez's days with Florida, in which much of his activity seemed to be covered up or minimized during his days at the University of Florida?
Yeah.
Just your general perspective on the whole Hernandez deal.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, Aaron Hernandez is, in a sad way, reflective of parts of our society. I wouldn't blame Urban Meyer per se. I think there's a lot of coaches throughout America that kind of look the other way sometimes when players are able to produce for them. You know, there's players like, you know, Aaron comes from a cultural background that, you know, he's Hispanic. And he, and understanding from that perspective, respect is a very big thing in the Hispanic culture. And so Aaron Hernandez, when people say he's a product of his environment, he is. And from a psychological perspective, he is. But there were elements that illuminated some questionable behavior along the way. There were some assessments given at the University of Florida that illuminated some question marks, and people chose to look the other way, or he got treatment for it, I'm not sure. And then also into the combine going forward, there were some assessments that were done on him that illuminated that from a social perspective, he may have some challenges. So there, the warning signs were there, but they're there for a lot of players. And I think what happened with Aaron is he just, you know, he came to a situation where he felt like he was disrespected in a certain context. And culturally speaking, in his cultural perspective, that made all the difference in the world. And he felt like he had to make a decision that was life or death. And he made that decision.
Robert Kraft said the Patriots were duped, among many things he said a week or two back. How much responsibility do the Patriots share? Not so much for drafting him as they did on the fourth round, but on giving him a very lucrative contract extension.
Right. Well,
a year ago.
Yeah, I think Kraft is being a little hard on himself because, I mean, you can't control external behavior with, you know, your players. You can draft them, you can do personality assessments on them, and you can really try to minimize bringing in people who, you know, have their decision making is questionable. But, you know, again, it goes back to cultural influences and kind of his practices and norms of what he grew up with and the way he processes. I mean, there are people who are violent personalities that play in the NFL. Let's not pretend like they're not. There are people. I mean, you know, you have to have a certain personality to play in the NFL. I mean, depending on what position you play, it's a violent game. And so I think it's not as surprising to me that something like this happens. But I think what we can do is learn from it, Sandy, and understand that we've got to do more. And when I say we, I mean the NFL, each individual franchise has to do more at really assessing these players when they come out. And, you know, this lends itself to the Broncos executives, too.
Yes,
which we'll
talk about in a moment.
Yeah, when you hire people, you can't just go by the observable or what we call overt behavior. I mean, that, you know, how you practice, your work ethic, your good communicator, those type of things are observable. But what about the behavior we can't observe? We call that covert behavior, okay? That's thoughts and feelings. We can't see that. So we're not very good in American business and American organizations at understanding that we still have to know what your covert behavior is to really assess the total person. And personality assessments give us that little window into a person of their covert behavior, i.e. their thoughts and their feelings, to really illuminate what could be going on with them. Aaron Hernandez had to, if he did, we don't know for sure because it's just alleged, but if he indeed he did play a role in the murder of this individual, then he did that in a methodology to really reduce arousal or anxiety. And that was his methodology. And what we have to understand better, both in psychology and in sport, is how we can really illuminate some of these loopholes or some of these, you know, personality covert behaviors that we can really identify earlier on and really say, hey, you know what, let's take a longer look at this person.
Do you find the most compelling, disturbing even aspect of this story, the severity of what is alleged? Or do you look at it and say, boy, out of all this, I'm surprised there aren't more Aaron Hernandez
Yes.
cases.
Yes. I mean,
relative to the NFL.
I'll be really honest with you, Sandy. I'm surprised there's not more because I think that, you know, one of the things the NFL is getting much better at is really, you know, some of these symposiums they're requiring
Yes.
the rookies to go to,
Right.
you know, prior to being drafted are really educational and doing a good job. But, you know, you have someone like Nate Webster, for example, that was here a few years ago with the Broncos, a linebacker who is serving a prison sentence. And different people get different notoriety for their crimes. But, yeah, I am really surprised that it doesn't happen more often. Not because the NFL is full of bad people. That's not what I'm asserting. But what I am saying is that there is a culture in the NFL of, in certain positions more than others, where, you know, aggressive, assertive, and even violent behavior is accepted.
Yeah. So you would say, on balance, you think the NFL is doing a pretty good job, Goodell as commissioner, effectively handling this? And in the Bronco case, we'll get into your thoughts on that in a moment, letting the team impose the discipline without the league getting involved. Some have said perhaps the league should be involved, or others indicate maybe completely uninvolved. Maybe just let the teams handle it.
Right.
You think they found the right balance, though?
Yeah, I do. But I still think each franchise could do more. I know they could. I know specifically. I've given proposals to certain teams that look at what we do and they're saying, no, we're not, we don't think we need to do that yet. And so, and that's more analysis.
So you think the league almost in a sense is ahead of the member teams?
I do, because they're the ones that are pushing forward these symposiums, these mandated symposiums that the
more
rookies,
so than teams are.
Yeah, have to attend. And the teams individually are really a reflective of the schema of the people at the in the head of the offices. And they're the ones that really need to take this to the next step and understand how psychology plays a role in their players' lives.
All right. We'll talk about the situation with the Broncos executives that's been in the news over the past couple of weeks. When we continue, Dr. Richard Perea, our in-studio guest on your home for the best live and local sports talk, Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio, 104.3 The Fan. This day, this week, this month with Dr. Richard Perea, who is appearing with us. And we'll get Dr. Perea on once the football season gets underway on a slightly more regular basis. Good response on the Total Beverage text line this hour at 29588. Sandy Clef with you on your home for the best live and local sports talk, Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. Dr. Richard Perea, our in-studio guest this hour. From the 303, why are people upset that the analysis is supposedly negative? The Broncos are being picked to win it all in virtually every place I've seen. We know they're good. Any respectable analysis at this point should involve what might cause the Broncos to fall short of that goal. Everything else would be simply redundant at this point. Your point, exactly. Right?
Absolutely, yeah. Because, I mean, you know what? My goal in coming on this show is not to be a cheerleader. It's really not. It's to be able to illuminate potential antithesis of popular thought. And what that means is I analyze things, and I'm objective about analyzing it. Because I'm not necessarily a fan of the Broncos. I was a free agent with them in 83, and I know some of the people in their office, but I'm not a fan. I analyze these from a more objective standpoint. If they're successful, hallelujah, that's great, that's wonderful, but I do bring an objective perspective, and that should not necessarily be considered negative, just more analytical.
All right. Speaking of analysis and perhaps being critical, our show yesterday centered on the discipline doled out by the Broncos with respect to Tom Hekert and Matt Russell. Most of our conversation yesterday, at least on this end, involved basic thesis that the Broncos had handled themselves reasonably well, had gotten it right, quote unquote. We did a poll, a fan poll yesterday. I think it ended up somewhere between two-thirds and three-quarters thought they got it just right. A little bit less than one in five thought they were too harsh. The lowest percentage was attached to the too lenient edge of things. You have a bit more to offer in the way of criticism, I'm sensing.
Yes. I think that the first communique out of the Broncos was that this is unacceptable behavior.
That was Joe Ellis.
Joe Ellis. Yeah, that was the
first. A little more than a week ago.
Yeah, that was the first communique that came out that this was unacceptable. If you're going to make that statement, then it needs to be unacceptable. And that means nothing short of zero tolerance, and they're terminated. If you're going to say this goes against our mission and vision of what this organization represents and the league represents, and there will be severe punishment, that's understandable, and that's more of what the line they've gone.
Yes.
But don't come out and say it's unacceptable.
Ridiculous.
And ridiculous and embarrassing and some of those words.
Right.
And then you really are accepting it with conditions. I just would advise them to get their communique a little more in order and say, it does violate our team policies, our league policies, and we find this behavior not appropriate, and we will penalize it as such. That's very accurate, and that's what they're doing.
They spent more time this week, particularly Joe Ellis, talking about the needs of the two people involved.
Right.
That bothered you a little bit, didn't
it? Well, I mean, as I'm a compassionate person, people make mistakes, and I understand that. But at the same time, I think it can send a message. I mean, if you've had a family member that's been affected by a drunk driver before, I suspect that this topic is a little bit sensitive for you. So I think we have to understand the populace out there and how this affects people. You know, one of the things I think the Broncos could really benefit from, and many teams in the league, I know there's several that do use this. Again, I'll come back to personality assessments. When you hire Tom Eckert, for example, okay, you go by his reputation, his resume, recommendations, his body of work.
One of those recommendations coming from Matt Russell.
Absolutely. But one of the things that they're probably not doing extensively enough are these personality assessments. And I want to be real specific with people so they understand what I'm talking about. Overt behavior are the things we can see, okay? I mean, you're a great talk show host. You communicate well. You're analytical. You have all these characteristics. We can see that. But we don't know your innermost thoughts and feelings. And how do we find that out? Can we ask you honestly? Can you be relied upon to give honest responses? Perhaps. But the best way to illuminate that is to give you personality assessments. Because what you may have is somebody who has some really deficit-based thoughts and feelings. You know, people can appear on the outside like they're very confident people, Sandy, but from the inside, they operate from a really deficit base. And so what we want to know in organizational psychology is how do we illuminate that? And so all the top organizations in the world that involve in business, they use personality assessments when they hire CEOs. They use personality assessments when they hire CFOs, high stake. And what the NFL is going to eventually learn is that each of the franchises, whether they – you've known this guy for 20 years, and he coached with your father, he coached with your college coach, you still need to do personality assessments on him because you really don't know him until you know their innermost thoughts and feelings.
Are they, in a sense, though, perhaps trying to communicate what you just said? Maybe not all that effectively. When, especially with respect to Russell, they make it kind of an open-ended deal. Aren't they, in effect, saying, yeah, we have a lot of information, but we really haven't decided yet.
Yeah, and I like that process. The way they did it with Russell is it is kind of open-ended. Here's a situation where, you know, he's going to dictate a lot of his success or lack of success in this process. His treatment, they haven't outlined what that is, and it's really not any of our business, but that treatment should go forward, and Matt will have a big piece in determining whether he's successful in that. And I like that because it really leaves open the door that he still could be terminated. And
yes.
I think one of the things that we need to understand, if something is unacceptable, you need to really postulate it and live it that way. Because the message of your overall organization trickles from the top, and the climate and the culture you set is determined by the way you handle your daily operations.
Dr. Perea, as always, we appreciate it. We have, at the end of this hour, some breaking news. Nate Lundy has come on. CU has a new athletic director.
They do. It is Rick George, a familiar name, the former assistant AD from 87 to 91. He's currently the president of the Texas Rangers baseball program, but he will be making his return to Boulder. Phil DeStefano announcing that just minutes ago.
All right. So breaking news. We'll talk about that. Dr. Perea, thank you very much. We'll visit next month.
Thank you, Sandy.
And
great to be here.
More regularly during the regular season. We look forward to that.
Thank you, Sandy. Great to be here.
Thank you. And we have an hour ahead. Your reaction. We'll get into some of the details. Rick George, the new AD at the University of Colorado, on your home for the best live local sports talk, Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.